It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
I find that it takes work to get your brain around these ideas, and it takes work to engage in these conversations.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
With what is happening down at the State House, I used to think that it was above my pay grade to read the legislation, and it's not.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
I see big danger in as much as we will be giving an unelected bureaucrat the power to make rules about what we inject into our bodies.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed, let's have a conversation, and welcome to the Kim Munson Show. Thank you so much for joining us. You're each treasured, you're valued, you have purpose today. Strive for excellence. Take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, and your body. My friends, we were made for this moment. Thank you to the team I work with. I am so grateful for them. That is producer Joe, and producer Luke, and producer Rachel, and producer Nicole, and Zach, Echo, Charlie, all the people here at Crawford Broadcasting. I get to work with a really amazing team. And check out our website. That is Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Sign up for our weekly email newsletter. And you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. And thank you to all of you who support us. We're an independent voice, and we search for truth and clarity by looking at these issues through the lens of freedom versus force, force versus freedom. If something's a good idea, you should not have to force people to do it. We are pre-recording all the shows for our Thanksgiving week. And a guest, and we have these great special guests for these special weeks. And a gentleman who you know is Bill Federer. And he is the creator of the American Minute, which you can hear on KLZ 560. He has written many, many books, but we want to talk about Thanksgiving, and in particular, one particular book that he's written, The Treacherous World of the 16th Century, and How the Pilgrims Escaped It, the prequel to America's Freedom. Bill Federer, welcome to the show.
It's great to be with you.
Boy, that's quite a title. But I think people, I recently gave a speech. I said that here in America now, we live in the best of times and we live in the worst of times. And the best of times, we are living on the blessings of what freedom can do. But our worst of times, I think it is under attack. We're in a dangerous time in our country as well, but our country began during very treacherous times, and so hence your book.
Right. So the first thing I do is explain how in Europe you had to believe the way your king did. It was considered treason if you did not. And so you had all the way from Constantine on, you had the top-down form of church government called hierarchical clergy-laity model. When the Reformation happened, you had Protestants, John Calvin, and Puritans that came up with a congregational model of church government with no bishops, no bishops, no king. And so when the King of England, Henry VIII, had broken away from Rome, he made himself the head of the Anglican Church, and he had his advisor say, well, if you really want to break from Rome, you need to stop using that Latin Bible. Get yourself an English Bible. Some of the German princes had Martin Luther's German Bible. That helped them to break away. You need an English Bible. Henry says, great, get me one. Well, it just so happens a few years earlier, Henry VIII had William Tyndale burnt at the stake for translating the Bible into English. But now he wants an English Bible. William Tyndale's last words before he died was, Lord, open the King of England's eyes. And so Henry VIII wants to divorce Catherine of Aragon. After 18 years, she did not have a son. Wants to marry Anne Boleyn. The Pope wouldn't recognize the divorce, so he decides to make himself the head of his own church. And then he gets this English Bible. They take Tyndale's work, polish it up, call it the Great Bible. And he puts it in every church in England, dusts his hands. He goes, that's it, we broke him from Rome. But something unexpected happened. People began to read it and began to compare what's in this Bible to this king divorcing and beheading his wives. And so a group started that wanted to purify the Church of England, so they were nicknamed the Puritans. The king didn't like him. He thought he didn't need any purifying. He thought he was fine just the way he is. So he persecuted them. He had an archbishop named William Laud, L-A-U-D, And he composed a list of all believers in England, put an O or a P by their name, O for Orthodox, P for Puritan, and the Puritans were canceled, kicked out of jobs, kicked out of teaching at Oxford. And then there was another group that said it's beyond hope of purifying. We're going to separate ourselves. We're going to meet in these small congregations with no bishops. We're just going to be completely independent. And they call themselves separatists. They formed themselves into the Baptist Church, the very first Baptist Church in England. And then they later the Congregationalist churches, and then later the Quakers, and then the Presbyterians. They had small groups. They called them conventicles and covenanters. And the king did not like that. And he would persecute them. They would be in their barns and basements by candlelight. Their church meetings would be raided. And so the king had the Book of Common Prayer. So you do not make up your own prayers, because you could make up one that's wrong. So the government wrote all the possible prayers down and put them in a book called the Book of Common Prayer. You feel like praying, you just open it to the right page and read the prayer. And if you're caught with a little Bible study and you don't have a bishop there and you're making up your own prayers, the FBI will kick in the door, will arrest you, will drag you before the Star Chamber. It's a room with stars on the ceiling. It's a government hearing room. That's sort of like a January 6th right hearing room. And they'll twist your arm and cut off your ear and brand you on the face as a heretic and get you to confess to something you didn't do. And then they would put you in a cell. And just let you waste away for days, months, years. One of the people they caught was John Bunyan, and he is being drug away. He goes, better to be persecuted than be the persecutor. He spends 12 years in one of those cells, and that's when he writes Pilgrim's Progress, that famous novel that we've read or seen the movie of. And anyway, then the king passed the Conventicle Act, where it outlawed small group meetings, and they later changed the name of it to the Riot Act, because you could be planning an insurrection in your little Bible study, right? You're not having the king's bishop there. And so the police would kick in the door and pull out a piece of paper and read the Riot Act.
So that's where that comes from, huh? Read the Riot Act.
He'd read it, and it would say, everyone must immediately disperse, or we will arrest you, drag you to that Star Chamber, and lock you in a cell. You'll never be seen again. And so, and the king did not like small group meetings so much that he outlawed coffee houses. Now, coffee was from Ethiopia, the one African country to stay Christian, and the Muslims called the Christians in Ethiopia coffers, which means infidel. And so they called it the coffer bean or the coffee bean.
Wow.
And so the Muslims would bring them with them on their crusades. The Muslim crusaded. They conquered all of North Africa, which used to be Christian. They conquered Spain, which used to be Christian. They conquered the Holy Land, which used to be Christian. They conquered Syria, which used to be Christian. They conquered Turkey, which used to be the Byzantine Christian Empire. All seven churches mentioned in the Book of Revelation were wiped out by the Muslim Turks. And then they conquered Constantinople, cutting off the land routes to India. That's when Columbus set sail looking for a sea route. But finally, they're outside of Vienna, Austria. And they're stopped on September 11th, 1683, by the Polish king, Jan Sobieski. But Sobieski goes into these abandoned Muslim tents and sees these bags of beans, and realizes this was this new Muslim drink that allowed them to fight day and night. And they weren't sure if they should drink it, and so they took a cup of it to Pope Clement. He tasted it, said, this is too good to leave for the Muslims. Let's cheat the devil by baptizing it. And then that gave the okay, so coffee houses started all across Europe. It's actually a social phenomenon where instead of going to pubs and ale houses, they would transition to going to coffee houses. And since they would be hyped up rather than be put to sleep, some think this helped fuel a later industrial revolution, right? You get more ideas and more creativity. Anyway, in London, they had 3,000 coffee houses. People would gather together, drink coffee, and talk about the king and his government, and would criticize it. And the king did not like that, because every now and then a group would start and have an assassination attempt against him. And so he outlawed coffee houses as well as outlawing Bible studies. And
I'd be in jail for sure, because I like both of those.
And so these Pilgrim Separatists were raided. They met at their home of a government agent named William Brewster, and he had a state. He was like a postal administration, and the Pilgrims would meet there. Well, a neighbor snitched, and the police would raid their Bible study, and they'd put him in prison and jail and stocks, where they put your hands and your head through this piece of wood, and you just stand there in the middle of the street all day long, and you'd be mocked and made fun of. And then the Pilgrims decide to flee to Holland. Now, Holland was seven provinces, or the Netherlands. Holland was one of those seven provinces, and they were trying to get independent from Spain. So it was an 80-year war of independence for Holland to break away from Spain, or the Netherlands. And these provinces did not always agree on religion, but they hated Spain so much they'd have a little give and take. So Holland was the most religiously tolerant place in all of Europe, the Netherlands. And so the Pilgrims said, hey, we're getting persecuted by the king here in England. Let's flee to the Netherlands. And so they, a bunch of them sell their property, and they go down to the port city and buy a ticket, and they all get on. And right before they take off, the captain robs them, turns them over to the police, and they're put in jail for being heretics and not believing the way the king did. And so some other of these Pilgrim Separatists decided to arrange for a Dutch ship to sail along the coast of England, and they would just be waiting little rowboats, and then they would hurry up and row out there and get on the ship and sail away. Well, the Pilgrims show up a day early, and they're waiting in these little rowboats, and the waves and the surf, and the kids are getting sick, and they're just waiting and waiting, and the women say, can we just wait on shore? And so women and kids are waiting on shore, and finally the Dutch ship shows up. They men are rowing out there, and they're stowing everything on the ship, and while they're waiting, somebody saw the ship, snitched to the police. The police and the soldiers come over the hill, capturing the women and children. And the Dutch captain's like, well, I don't have any army with me, and I can't fight. And so he sails away with the men. And you can just picture these women on shore seeing this boat sailing away with their husband, and it disappears over the horizon, and those women and children are put in jail. And they're taken to court, to another court, another jail, another court, for 2 years.
Oh, my God.
These women and children are being shuffled from one court to the other. Finally, a judge said, well, you really didn't do anything wrong. Go home. They go, duh, we sold our homes to go to Holland. So just to get them out of their hair, they put them on a ship, sent them over to Holland. They asked around, and they finally found out where their husbands were, and then they all settled in Leiden, Holland, and
wow.
Holland, was it?
Okay. Well, let's stop right there. I'm talking with Bill Federer, and really this is a history about, right now we're really talking about religious freedom. And we have these discussions because of my sponsors, and one of those is the Roger Mangan State Farm Insurance Team. And Roger knows that there are things that can keep you up at night, and they can certainly help with that. And they understand those unknowns can be of great concern. And so they can help you with health insurance and life insurance to replace lost income and other things. So call Roger Mangan at 303-795-8855 for a complimentary appointment. Like a good neighbor, the Roger Mangan Insurance Team is there.
So I switched my insurance to the Roger Mangan State Farm Insurance Agency. Get this. I actually talked to Roger Mangan, who has been helping people with their insurance coverage in our community for 47 years. He helped me create a State Farm personalized price insurance plan for my home and auto and explained affordable options. For personalized service and peace of mind that you are working with a team that cares about you and your family, call Roger Mangan now at 303-795-8855. Kim highly recommends the Roger Mangan State Farm Insurance Team. Again, that number is 303-795-8855.
With the limited number of homes in the Colorado Front Range market, Karen Levine can help you achieve your home buying or selling vision. Karen has the right connections, technology, and strategies to help you buy or sell your home or to purchase a new build. Whether you're feeling overwhelmed or want someone to take the wheel, or you just need a second opinion, you can rest assured that RE/MAX Realtor Karen Levine is the right agent for you. Call Karen Levine at 303-877-7516. Karen is the trusted professional who strives for excellence. That number is 303-877-7516.
And welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. Happy Thanksgiving to all of you. We have pre-recorded the shows this week. I'm so honored to have an honored and featured guest, and that is Bill Federer. He is the creator of the American Minute. You can hear that on KLZ 560 and all of our platforms. He's written so many different books, and he's just a wealth of knowledge. And we're talking about his book, The Treacherous World of the 16th Century and How the Pilgrims Escaped It. So, Bill Federer, we're talking about the pilgrims. The women and children end up being in jail, basically, for 2 years in Holland. And finally, they end up then going to Holland, and they are going to be reunited with the men. So tell us about that.
Right. So they settle in Leiden, Holland, and that is where there's a university that was started in 1572, because the year before, 1571, you had the Spanish stopping the Muslims on the Mediterranean with the Battle of Lepanto, biggest battle ever on the Mediterranean Sea. 230 Muslim ships powered by 15,000 Christian slaves under the deck rowing in the Holy League, led by the King of Spain. The Austrians, because Spain controlled Austria too, and they stopped the Muslims. And rather than go around the Mediterranean and free up the rest of the Mediterranean from Muslim control, the King of Spain, the next year, 1572, decided to stop the Reformation that was taking place in Holland. So he sends the Iron Duke of Alba to Antwerp, Holland, and he commits the Spanish Fury and kills 10,000 Dutch Reformed Protestants. And now there were Catholics killing Protestants, Protestants killing Catholics, a lot of killing going on at this time. So we don't want to get into reopening all that. But in Holland, the seven provinces, the William the Silent, the Prince of Orange, drives the Spanish out and then opens a university, and it's very tolerant. They even have a Jewish rabbi. So Spain drove the Jews out, and some of the Jews went to Portugal, and some of the Jews went to Holland. Matter of fact, some of the Jews went to the Dutch colony in South America, Recife, and then when the Spanish and Dutch attacked there, these Jews fled again to Jamaica, and then they fled to a Dutch colony called New Amsterdam, and that became New York. So these Dutch had a merchant military fleet and the Dutch East India Company, and it was the most prosperous company in world's history. If I can go down a rabbit trail, in the Middle Ages, there's no companies. It's the sin of usury to pay or receive interest. So if you want to do something big, like sail around the world looking for trade and spices, you had to hit up a rich guy, like the King of Spain. And so when the Reformation happened, Holland had more or less the first company called the Dutch East India Company. And you could buy a part ownership in a boat that's going to Moluccas Island in Indonesia for nutmeg and cinnamon. And when it came back, you would get a share of the profit. So it's called a joint stock company. And if you wanted to sell your interest in this boat while it's at sea, you would go down to something that they invented. It was called a stock exchange. The Amsterdam Stock Exchange, first one ever in the world. And so the Dutch that settled New Amsterdam brought over their on Wall Street, where they had the wall around New Amsterdam. That's where they would trade their stock, and that turned into Wall Street in America. But over there, the Amsterdam Stock Exchange, it was the first one ever in the world. They even had the first stock market crash. So tulips came from Turkey, and the Dutch liked tulips, and they would put little, you know, certain kind of bacteria would make the different colorful flowers when they finally bloomed. And so there was the tulip Windhausen, the tulip wind craziness, where people were buying these tulips. The cost of a house, a year's salary, they would buy one tulip, and it was like, buy and sell it. And then the tulip started blooming, and nobody wanted to buy them anymore. And the whole thing collapsed, and it was like a big major stock market crash. And then if you're investing in a boat, and the boat is captured by Muslim pirates or it sinks in a hurricane, that's when the Dutch invented insurance companies.
Oh, my gosh.
So the very first insurance companies in the world were the Dutch. And now the British quickly copied, and they had the British East India Company that later took over India. And then the British founded the Virginia Company and then the London Company, where they settled Virginia and Massachusetts and So we have the Dutch, and they have these seven provinces, and 80-year War of Independence from Spain. One of the cities the Spanish had surrounded, and they would butcher everybody in the city. I mean, it was pretty brutal. So the Dutch broke the dikes, and so Holland, a lot of it is below sea level. If you've ever been to the beach and you can, like, walk out a quarter of a mile and it only comes out to your waist, you know, mm-hmm. Well, they would build a wall way out there in the ocean. And then they would get windmills to pump, and they would take the water and pump it over that little wall on the other side, and they would reclaim that land. And they would bring in fresh dirt, and then they'd have to keep these windmills going to keep the salt water. And then they would extend it a little bit further and extend it a little bit further until they have miles and miles of area, and it's all below sea level. Well, when the Spanish were attacking the city, they broke the dikes, and the seawater comes in and drowns the Spanish army. So the pilgrims settle in Leiden, and William Brewster is the smart guy. He's the one who had his nice estate in England, but he left all that. And he is there in Leiden, and he's helping to teach English. And while he's there, he meets the Jews. And so the Jews were chased out of Spain. Many of them went to Holland. And the Jews began to identify with the Jews. And say, you left the Pharaoh, and we left the King of England, and you crossed the Red Sea, and we crossed the English Channel, and you went into your promised land. We're looking for our promised land. And so in all their writings, these pilgrims began to see themselves as sort of carrying on this Jewish, and they particularly looked to the first 400 years out of Egypt before King Saul. So it's called the Hebrew Republic. And it's the period from around 1400 B.C. to 1000 B.C. where you have millions of people and no king. It's literally the first instance in world history where you have millions of people and no king. And it worked because every Israelite was taught the law, and they were personally accountable to God to follow the law, and they were in a covenant with each other and with God. So God gives you blessings, and you voluntarily share them with your neighbor because you're doing it as unto God. Not socialism, where the government takes away your stuff involuntarily and gives it to their supporters. No, this is where you get the stuff. And so the pilgrims began to identify with the Hebrews. And then the rabbis had their feast at the end of the year, the feast of, you know, the tabernacles. It was Thanksgiving. And so in Holland, in Leiden, they had two Thanksgivings. One was an annual Thanksgiving to thank God for driving the Spanish out, and the other was the pilgrims saw these Jews celebrating their Jewish feast of Thanksgiving or tabernacles. And so the thought is, maybe this is where the pilgrims got their idea for a Thanksgiving at the end of the harvest season when they came to America. When Spain is threatened, after 12 years of being in Holland, these pilgrims, they have to learn the Dutch language. They're working three jobs, and their kids are beginning to assimilate and become Dutch. And some of the young men are joining the Dutch merchant military fleet. And so these pilgrims realize we're just going to assimilate. We're going to be no more. And it was such a hard life that no more of these separatists were joining them. And then they even had a print shop, and they were printing stuff and smuggling it back into England. And the King of England sent people over to raid it and destroy the print shop. And so these pilgrims decide they want to flee again. And they originally think of going to Guyana, South America, because they read about the perpetual spring weather and the climate being really nice. But then they heard about the Spanish destroying a French colony called Fort Caroline. Today it's Jacksonville, Florida. But that in 1565, you had a bunch of French Protestants called Huguenots settle Fort Caroline. And the Spanish found out about it and surrounded their little fort and said, look, just surrender, and then we'll move you someplace else. Well, they surrender, and then they said, oh, we just forgot. You're heretics, and we don't have to keep our word to heretics. And so they killed the men, and then they took the women and children away. And so then the Spanish founded St. Augustine, Florida, which is the first the continuous settlement of Europeans in America. And so the pilgrims heard about the Spanish butchering these French. And so they said, you know what? We don't want to go to Guyana. We don't want to go anywhere where the Spanish are. And so the Dutch go to these pilgrim separatists and say, hey, you want to settle? We've finagled to get this area that we're going to call New Netherlands. And you can be our first settlers there. And the pilgrims say no. Now the Dutch do settle New Amsterdam in 1624, so just 4 years after 1620 when the pilgrims come over. But the pilgrims say no. So then the pilgrims try to get the king to let them have passage, and it's a whole lot of negotiating back and forth. And they finally get the okay, even though they're going to go to Jamestown and submit to the king's government. Because the king's looking for settlers. Jamestown originally was a company colony. And if I can go on another rabbit trail, there's three type of colonies. Company colonies, crown colonies, and proprietary colonies. So the company colony, that originates with the letter of marque that they would give the pirates. So Spain had the Caribbean, had Portobello, Panama, which was the big port that all the gold from South America came through. And Spain had gold, and the French and English and Dutch pirates would raid the Spanish ships. A French pirate named Leclerc, nicknamed Peg Leg because he had his leg blown off, he was based out of St. Lucia in the islands, and he had a fleet of pirate ships. And he would attack and capture Spanish gold. You had the French, but also the English. And Francis Drake, he was such a good pirate that he was nicknamed El Draque by the King of Spain. Now, there's three types of pirates. One is called privateer. And so you have a pirate capturing.
You know what, Bill, let's leave that as a cliffhanger for our next segment, the three different types of pirates. This is absolutely fascinating. I'm talking with Bill Federer. He is the creator of The American Minute, which we hear on KLZ 560. He's the author of many different books, and we're talking about his book, The Treacherous World of the 16th Century. Did want to mention the Center for American Values. They are located in Pueblo, Colorado. Pueblo is known as the home of heroes because there are four Medal of Honor recipients that call Pueblo home. But check out the Center for American Values. They do a couple of things. They honor our Medal of Honor recipients with their portraits of valor, and then also want to make sure that we instill and understand ourselves and for our children these foundational principles of honor, integrity, and patriotism. So they have all these great educational programs. You can get more information on that by going to AmericanValueCenter.org. That's AmericanValueCenter.org. We get to do all of this because of sponsors, and one of those is Johnny Stubbs Heating and Air Conditioning Services.
Colorado's rules and regulations continue to make it more expensive to heat and cool your home. Johnny Stubbs Heating and Air Conditioning Services works to continue to offer you proper guidance and help you make informed decisions about your heating and cooling needs. Johnny Stubbs' team of certified professionals has extensive experience installing, repairing, and maintaining air conditioning, heating, and water heater systems. Johnny Stubbs Services is committed to providing exceptional service and ensuring your comfort, safety, and satisfaction. JohnnyStubbsServices.com, the trusted contractor for all your heating and air conditioning needs. That's JohnnyStubbsServices.com.
Boson Law is a local law firm dedicated to helping injured individuals in Denver and the surrounding areas fight for the justice they deserve. Boson Law focuses on personalized representation tailored to your unique situation, with one-on-one attention and counsel and consistent communication. Boson Law personal injury attorneys have extensive trial experience and have successfully represented clients against the interests of powerful corporations, manufacturers, insurance companies, and government agencies. Contact Boson Law at 303-999-9999 for a complimentary in-person consultation. Again, that number is 303-999-9999. Call now at 303-999-9999. 9999.
And welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. Be sure and check out our website. That is Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly email newsletter, and you can email me at Kim@KimMunson.com as well. Thank you to all of you who support us. We're an independent voice, and we search for truth and clarity by looking at these issues through the lens of freedom versus force, force versus freedom. If something's a good idea, you should not have to force people to do it. Want to say thank you to Caris Oil and Gas for their sponsorship of the show, as well as Laramie Energy and Thriving. And so thank you. We need to continue to have conversations about that. But this week is Thanksgiving, and happy Thanksgiving to all of you. And we're doing very special shows for you. We've pre-recorded them. And on the line with us is Bill Federer. He is the author of The American Minute, which you can hear here on KLZ 560, but on many stations throughout the country. But we're talking about his book, The Treacherous World of the 16th Century, How the Pilgrims Escaped It. And Bill, before we went to break, we were talking about pirates, and you said there's three different kinds of pirates. What are they?
Well, the first is called the privateer, and this is a subcontracted pirate. So the Queen Elizabeth in England had Sir Francis Drake, and he would rob the Spanish ships of their gold. But once you have a ship filled full of gold, what do? You sail around in a circle? No, you got to land somewhere and spend it. And so the Queen of England said, look, I'm going to not ask questions of where you got this, but when you land in England, I get a percentage. And so that's called a letter of marque. And then you had buccaneers.
Now, that's not like a percentage going to the big guy, is it? just had to ask.
Pretty similar.
Okay.
And then you had buccaneers. So that comes from baca, which means cow. So the sailors would go through, and they would let cows out on the island. Sometimes they would let pigs out, too. But and then the cows would just eat and live and multiply. And then the next time they'd be going through the island, if they wanted something to eat, they'd stop and barbecue a cow. Barbecue came from the islanders. Unfortunately, they had, some of them were cannibals. They called them Caribbee. And so you had to be really careful which island you would stop off on. But they would steal these cows, and so they were called buccaneers. Well, so the fine print of the letter of marque said that you would give the monarch in England a percentage of what you captured at sea. And Captain Henry Morgan said, at sea. That means if I get it on land, I don't have to give him anything. So he lands in Panama, and he marches through the jungle with his men, and they capture Portobello, Panama. And this is the city that all the gold comes from the Potosi mines in Inca Peru that come up to Portobello. They get on these ships and they go to Spain. He rapes and pillages and kills and captures all this gold. And the Spaniards are like, okay, England, we know you know that these guys are doing this, and we're going to declare open war on England if you don't stop it. And so the monarchs are like, okay, privateers and buccaneers, no more. And so they would one by one go to him and say, look, if you just switch over and join the British Navy, we'll make you a captain. So that's what Henry Morgan does. He goes from being a pirate to being a captain. Huh. I mean, it's the best of both worlds. And once he's a captain, he starts approaching his other pirate acquaintances and says, okay, guys, that's over. We got to switch over to this new model. And some of them switch and some of them don't. And the one that doesn't is Edward Teach. And he's nicknamed Blackbeard. And since the pirates are now snitching on pirates, they know where all the hangouts are. And so he had a favorite hangout around North Carolina on the coast near Beaufort and Okra. And he had to downsize. And he had several ships. And so he decides he's going to abandon his one ship called the Queen Anne's Revenge. And he's going to do it off the coast of the Outer Banks of North Carolina. And so that's where he sinks it. He keeps on doing his piracy stuff. And you have something called false flag. I talk about it in my book on socialism, where pirates really didn't want to get into a fight because if they got wounded, there's no pirate hospitals. And they didn't want to destroy the very booty that they're trying to capture. And so it was a psychological thing. So they would raise a flag of a friendly ship in distress, and another ship would come by and see through their little telescope, oh, look, there's a friendly ship in distress. And they would get closer and closer and closer until they got too close to get away quickly. And the friendly ship in distress flag would come down, false flag, and up would come a pirate flag. And the pirate flag with the skull and crossbones and the scimitar sword came from the Muslims. So the Muslims had pirates on the Mediterranean Sea, and they would raid all the European ships and cut off heads. And so they would have the scimitar sword, and so that's what the pirates adopted as their Jolly Roger type of skull and crossbones, scimitar sword flag. And so these the people would panic. And Blackbeard, Edward Teach, he was like 6'8", and he had this big mop of black hair, big black beard, and he would take the wicks from the cannons that you would light the cannon up with, and he'd light them on fire and stick them in his beard and in his hair, so he looked like this big, huge, smoking demon, and he would have a dagger in his teeth, and he'd have the gun, the pistols in his hand, and his men would board the ship, and everybody would, like, panic and say, okay, take my gold, just take all my stuff, just let me live. And so it was a psychological thing, and so that went into our vernacular as a false flag, where, a government would plan something for the sole purpose of getting everybody to panic and fear, so they'll quickly surrender. Here's my freedom, track me, follow me. I'll take whatever you tell me to do. Just let you know. And anyway, so Blackbeard is finally, and he would get drunk, before the fight. And so they shot him a bunch of times. They stabbed a bunch, and he's continuing to fight. Finally, somebody comes up behind him and kills him. And they chop off his head and they hang his head from the yardarm of the ship. And for a year, the ship sails around with Blackbeard's head hanging on it. And they would capture pirates and put him in iron cages at the entrance to a port. So you go through there and you see the bones of the pirate rotting away.
Oh my gosh! Do you think does when we get to the Constitution, no cruel and unusual punishment? I mean, wouldn't it be based on some of the stuff that they were doing?
But the British did this. I mentioned how they would put the Baptists in the Newgate prison or the Tower of London. They didn't feed you in the British prison. You had to have some friend that missed you and would bring you food. Huh. And so one of these Baptists, the founders of the Baptist faith in England were John Smith, John Burton, and Thomas Helwise. And branching off of that first Baptist church is John Robinson's church, and we call them the Pilgrims. Huh. So the Pilgrims were basically a Baptist church split. And John Merton is in the English prison, and some friend brings him some food and a little bottle of milk, but instead of a cork, it had a wad of paper. And when the guard wasn't around, he unfolded the paper, took a splinter, dipped it in the milk, and he would write out his pamphlets. The milk dries, it's clear, and they would fold up the pamphlet and the paper, stick it in the empty bottle. And then when his friend took it home, he would unfold the paper, hold it above a candle, and the heat of the candle would turn the milk brown. They could see what he wrote, and they would typeset these pamphlets. And but you'd have friends die and starve to death in prison because nobody knew where they were at. And so,
well, and let me go back because I think I took you down a different rabbit hole. Anything else regarding Blackbeard, or you said the bones and all that? Is there anything else on that as we're getting back then over to John Merton?
Yeah, we got to get to the building. Okay, so you had privateers where you would give the king a portion.
Okay.
Then you would have buccaneers where they could steal stuff on land and wouldn't have to give the king anything. But then you had pirates, and a pure pirate is somebody that's it's a privateer gone haywire. He'll attack anybody, even ships from his own country. And that's what Blackbeard was, a pirate.
Okay.
But the privateer, the letter of marque, that turned into companies. And so the king, somebody would say, hey, we want to sail over to the first company of merchant adventurers, a bunch of rich guys who pitched in their money. They were going to sail north of Russia to get to China in 1555. And the boats gets frozen in the ice, and they all die except the dog sled comes out and takes them to Ivan the Terrible of Russia. So they changed the name of the company to the Muscovy Company. But the idea was the king risks nothing. The king spends nothing, but he gets a percentage of what comes in. And so it's a win-win for the king. And so the British have companies, the Dutch have companies, the Dutch have the Dutch East India Company. The pilgrims decide they want to come to America. They are out of money. They approach some investors in England who form the Virginia Company, and they have bylaws. And sort of getting ahead of myself, but the bylaws said everything would be owned in common. And they actually tried it for 7 years, and they almost starved to death. And the bylaws said everything got by cooking, hunting, fishing, trading shall go into ye common stock, and everything that people need will come out of ye common stock. And at the end of every year, what's left will be divided equally among the investors, the adventurers, and then the planters or the settlers. And they tried it, and they almost starved to death. So William Bradford said, scrap this, owning stuff in common stuff. Everybody gets your own plot of land. And he said, this made all hands more industrious. The women now went willingly into the field and took their little ones with them to plant corn, while before they would allege weakness, and to have compelled them would have been thought great oppression. So basically the pilgrims tried communism, and they scrapped it. And then they gave everybody their own plot of land, and they had a great harvest, and we call that the first Thanksgiving. Back to the pilgrim boat ride. So the pilgrims get these investors, and they're in England, and they set sail on two ships. One is called the Godspeed, but it doesn't speed, or the Speedwell. I'm sorry, the Speedwell. And it doesn't speed well. So they have to take it back. They try to fix it. It still doesn't sail well. They have to take it back again. And they're going through months of good weather, and they're going through lots of their saved up food. And so they have to downsize and get onto the Mayflower. So now it's just down to one ship. And they are now sailing in, September, October, November, and it's a 3,000-mile journey, 66 days, and they're caught in the North Atlantic in storms.
Oh, my God.
And the terrible freezing weather, and so the pilgrims are confined to the between deck. It's a little four-foot-high space for 66 days, and they're tossing and turning.
Oh,
there's no bath. I mean, there's no privacy, and the sailors were making fun of them. And calling, one of these pilgrims named John Howland got tired of the smell, and so he climbed topside just as a wave was sweeping over the deck, and it washes him overboard in the freezing North Atlantic, where you only get a few minutes before you die, Well, a rope from the ship's sails was dragging in the water, and it caught his arm, and he was being dragged along, and they were able to pull him back into the boat. He's freezing, but he survives, and he ends up, getting married and having lots of descendants can be traced back to John Howland. And so the pilgrims land in America, but they were going to go to Jamestown to submit to the king's government.
And let's stop right there, Bill Fetter. We'll keep that as a cliffhanger for our last segment. And I'm talking with Bill Fetter, of the creator of the American Minute. I did want to mention the USMC Memorial Foundation, located right here in Golden, Colorado. And they're just doing great work to raise money for the remodel of the Marine Memorial. I am so grateful for them. You can get more information by going to usmcmemorialfoundation.org. That's usmcmemorialfoundation.org. And a great sponsor of the show is Lauren Levy.
The rise in interest rates is causing challenges and creating opportunities. For nearly 20 years, mortgage specialist with Polygon Financial Group, Lauren Levy, has helped individuals realize their hopes and dreams of home ownership, fund kids' educations through second mortgages, and access capital by utilizing reverse mortgages. Lauren is not constrained to work with just one lender because he works with so many different lenders. Licensed in 49 states, Lauren offers choices for your individual mortgage needs. Preparation leads to success, so call Lauren Levy at 303-880-8881 so that you're prepared for opportunity in the mortgage market. That's Lauren Levy, 303-880-8881.
Our future depends on educated, informed, and active citizens. You could do your part by reading Dr. James Lyons Weiler's latest articles at Popular Rationalism on Substack. That's popularrationalism.substack.com.
And welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. Happy Thanksgiving to all of you. Be sure and check out my website. That is Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Sign up for our weekly email newsletter there, and you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. Thank you to Laramie Energy and Karis Oil and Gas for their sponsorship of the show. We do wish you all a very happy Thanksgiving. We've pre-recorded this very special show, and I'm talking with Bill Fetter. He is the creator of the American Minute, which you can hear right here on all KLZ 560 platforms, but throughout the country. And we're talking about his book, The Treacherous World of the 16th Century and How the Pilgrims Escaped It. So the Pilgrims are on the Mayflower now, and they think they're going to Jamestown. What happens?
They get caught in a storm, and they land off the coast of Massachusetts. The captain tries to sail south, but they almost sink because it's really shallow off the coast of Cape Cod. And the captain says, forget Virginia, goes back to Plymouth Rock and says, everyone off the boat. And they say, well, we have a problem. Who is going to be in charge? We were going to go to Jamestown and submit to the king's government. Jamestown was a company colony. They had 500 people die. They had Indian attacks. They had famines. They had starvation. It was almost providential that the Pilgrims did not land there. The company colony went bankrupt. They threw it all in the king's lap. He sends over a royal crown governor. It's now a royal colony, ruled directly from the king. Sort of like India was ruled by the British East India Company for centuries, until finally the people of India went to the Queen Victoria and said, look, we don't want this company ruling it. So the queen decides to make it a royal crown colony of India, and she rules it directly. And then the third is a proprietary colony where the king gives it all to, like, William Penn and so forth. So the Pilgrims were going to go to Virginia and submit to the king's government. They get blown off course. They land in Massachusetts. There's no king-appointed person in their boat, and so they do something unique. They write the Mayflower Compact. And this is where everybody agrees, which says, we in the presence of God, having undertaken for the glory of God and the advancement of the Christian faith, a voyage to plant the first colony on the northern parts of Virginia, and we covenant ourselves together into a civil body politic to enact just and equal laws as shall be thought most meet or necessary, and to which we promise all due submission. Simple revolutionary. It was a polarity change in the flow of power on planet Earth. Instead of top-down rule by kings, it's bottom-up rule by we, just the 102 of us in the boat. There's no king-appointed person. We are all equal, and we're all going to agree to this. We're all going to covenant together. And that became their form of government that was the seed for self-government in America. And
wow.
So it's a polarity change in the flow of power. Instead of top-down rule by kings, it's bottom-up rule by we. And the word federal is Latin for covenant. And so you had these New England pastors that would come over with their little covenant churches, and they would take their covenant form of church government and make it their community government. We call this New England. They would have a meeting house, and that's where the pastor would teach the Bible. That's where they would get together and do their city business. And so all they had was church members. So all the church members were involved in the city government. There were, like, no non-church members to be lazy and let them run stuff. And the word synagogue means meeting house. That's where the rabbi would teach the law. That's where they would get together and do their city business. So these pilgrims were looking back to this Israel as the model, the first 400 years out of Egypt before they got a king, before King Saul. And so you had this Hebrew Republic where everybody is taught the law. In a sense, King Saul is the divider between England and America. The kings of England looked to the Bible for their authority, but they looked to this King Saul and on, the divine right of kings. I'm the chosen king. The Calvinist Puritans, right, and these pilgrims that founded New England, they looked to the pre-King Saul period. This 400-year period of Israel where there's millions of people and no king, it worked because every single person was taught the law. Everybody was personally accountable to God to follow the law, and they were in a covenant with each other and with God. And so this is so King Saul is the divider between America and England. Both look to the Bible. One looks to the King Saul and on. The other looks to the pre-King Saul. And so we are a pre-King Saul. We're people where we're all taught the law. We're accountable to God to follow it. And so this is what the pilgrims did with their Mayflower Compact. And so it was. That's why we look to the pilgrims as the seed of self-government. Now, in the couple of minutes I have left, I also want to throw in another little story, and that's Islam. So Muslims had pirates, and they would capture ships. And so William Bradford writes in his History of the Plymouth Plantation, he says, in 1625, the pilgrims had two ships with core fish, dried fish, and 800 pounds of beaver skins, as well as furs that they had saved up to send back to England for trade. And they said they went joyfully home till they were well within the English Channel, almost within sight of Plymouth, England. But even there, she was unhappily taken, one of the ships, by a Turkish man of war and carried off to Salar, Morocco, where the captain and the crew were made slaves. Thus, all their hopes were dashed, and the joyful news they meant to carry home was turned into heavy tidings. And now, by the ship taken by the Turks, all trade was dead. So here we have today fundamentalist Islamists, and they're doing their attacks. Well, guess what? The pilgrims themselves had to deal with these Muslim pirates. One of the Muslim pirates was named Barbosa, which means red beard, and he was from Algiers, and he would attack ships. Another one was called Dragut Reef, and he actually captured an entire Irish village, the stolen village of Baltimore, Ireland, in the 1600s. He came up at nighttime and rounded up the whole town and put them on ships, took them to Morocco, sold them into slavery. The king of Denmark, King Christian IV, tried to ransom back. So there were whole Catholic orders in Europe through the Middle Ages called the Trinitarians, and the head of the order was called the Ransomer, and they would collect alms and donations to go under a white flag to ransom your friend back. And so Miguel de Cervantes, that wrote Man of La Mancha, Don Quixote, he was captured by the Muslim pirates, and he was ransomed back by these Trinitarians. And the Muslims had Spain for 700 years, and they had enslaved over a million Europeans. And so this was like a fear. And since, you know, Spain controlled Holland for centuries, the story is that St. Nicholas, you know, would come once a year with presents, but he had a little helper named Zvarte Piet, who was a Muslim, and they tell the kids, if you're good, St. Nicholas will give you a present. If you're naughty, Zvarte Piet will put you in a gunny sack, take you back to Spain, and sell you into Muslim slavery.
Oh, my gosh.
And so when you tell little kids that Santa Claus is coming, they start crying. I was doing a call-in radio show one time, and a guy said, yeah, I was raised over in Holland, and every little boy in our town, the night before St. Nicholas visited, the boys would go to sleep with pocket knives in their pockets. And I said, why is that? He goes, that's to cut ourselves out of the gunny sack in case Mark D.P. took it. And I thought, boy, I would have loved to have tormented my little brothers with that story. But,
well, and Bill, this always goes so quickly. We have 2 minutes left. On this Thanksgiving Day, what an amazing story of all this history. How would you like to button this up?
I got 2 minutes. Squanto. So the pilgrims' land, half of them died the first winter, and they would not have survived another year But the spring of 1621, out of the woods comes an Indian speaking to them in perfect English, right? And it was Squanto. And so the Spanish and French and Dutch and English would capture Native Americans and bring them back to Europe, sell them into slavery. And that's what happened to Tish Squantum. And he was a slave purchased by some monks, given his freedom in Spain, and he hitchhikes his way across Europe, gets to England, and works there for years. Then he gets to work for a Newfoundland company, and he's learning English, and then he gets dropped off on the coast of America the just months before the Pilgrims land. And Squanto's there to find out his entire village is wiped out by a plague. Lo and behold, a few years earlier, a French ship had shipwrecked at Cape Cod, and the sailors got ashore, and the Indians killed most of them, but they must have had an illness. It wiped out the tribe. And so Squanto's like depressed, and he's living with another tribe when the his friend comes into his teepee and says, "Hey, Squanto, there's some English people on your old stopping ground." So the Pilgrims, in a sense, landed at the one spot on the eastern seaboard that was unpopulated, and none of the other tribes wanted that land because they thought that some great spirit had driven, killed everybody. And so the Pilgrims, Squanto comes in there, and you can just imagine the dismay. I mean, half the Pilgrims had died, and out of the woods comes an Indian, and he goes, "Oh, how are you guys doing?" You know, I mean, yeah, London. Yeah, I used to live in London. Yeah, you know. And then he goes, "Oh, in this place," and he's speaking to them in perfect English. And he's like, "I grew up right here. I know this place like the back of my hand. Oh, I'm over the hills this spring." And Squanto teaches him how to catch fish. They said, "We tried that." He goes, "No, these are salmon. They spawn. This river will be packed." You know, he's looking at the moon and can tell the time of year. And then he teaches him how to plant corn. They said, "We tried planting." He goes, "No, you got to put a fish there and bury it with the corn, and then it just fertilizes the soil." And then he teaches him how to take the corn, put it in a pot, shake it over a fire, and make popcorn.
Wow.
But most importantly, he taught him how to catch beaver. And it took 40 years worth of beaver skins for these Pilgrims to pay off the debt to that investor, those investors that financed their whole trip. But then Squanto was their interpreter, put them on good terms with the other tribes. And so the Pilgrims didn't have the Indian tax that Jamestown had. So William Bradford says that Squanto was a special instrument sent of God for their good beyond their expectation. And before he died, Squanto bequeathed several of his belongings and some of his English friends, and then he begged Governor Bradford to pray for him that he would go to the Englishman's God in heaven.
Wow.
And so here he probably became a Christian.
Wow.
It's a fascinating history.
Absolutely. Bill Fetter, thank you so much. This is so fascinating for our Thanksgiving, and I wish you and yours a very happy Thanksgiving. Thank you.
Thank you, Kim.
And our quote for the end of the show is G.K. Chesterton. He said, "I would maintain that thanks are the highest form of thought and that gratitude is happiness doubled by wonder." So, my friends, today be grateful, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. My friends, you are not alone. God bless you, and God bless America. Stay tuned for hour number two.
Those are the speaker, commentators, hosts, their guests, and callers. They are not necessarily the views and opinions of Crawford Broadcasting or KLZ management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.
It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
I find that it takes work to get your brain around these ideas, and it takes work to engage in these conversations.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
With what is happening down at the State House, I used to think that it was above my pay grade to read the legislation, and it's not.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
I see big danger in as much as we will be giving an unelected bureaucrat the power to make rules about what we inject into our bodies.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed, and welcome to hour number two of the Kim Munson Show. Thank you so much for joining us. You're each treasured, you're valued, you have purpose. Today, strive for excellence. Take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, and your body. My friends, we were made for this moment. Thank you to the team. That's producer Joe, producer Luke, and Rachel, Nicole, Zach, Echo, Charlie, all the people here at Crawford Broadcasting. Greatly appreciate each and every one of you. It is Thanksgiving Day, and we actually have pre-recorded this show. And I love these holiday weeks because we get to spend more time with these amazing guests. And on the line with me is Scott Powell. He is a senior fellow at the Discovery Institute, and he is the author of a very important book, Rediscovering America, How the National Holidays Tell an Amazing Story About Who We Are. And Rediscovering America was an Amazon number one new release in the American history category for 8 straight weeks because it reveals God's hand behind the success of the United States. Lessons that we can apply now since we have fallen away from God. And so today we need to come back to him to save and restore our country. And Rediscovering America will surprise you, delight you, and blow your mind. My friends, this is a book. We're coming into Christmas and Hanukkah season. That is a wonderful gift, but it is a book that each and every family should have the hard copy in their home on their Freedom Library. Scott Powell, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Kim. Great to be with you and your wonderful audience.
Well, it's great to have you. And as we were preparing for the show, just talking a little bit about the book, and I think that we as parents and grandparents in many ways have abdicated the education of our children to government-run schools in many cases. And we really need to be proactive in our children's education. And so sitting down over the holidays and reading a chapter, each chapter stands alone with our children or our grandchildren, can go a long way for people to understand this great American idea, Scott.
Well, you know, it is an adventure story. The American story has so many players and so many different periods, and we went through struggles, we overcame. The American story is really the grandest story in human history, because America is the first nation in all of human history that was founded on the basis that people had God-given unalienable rights, and it was the primary role of government to protect those rights. You know, in all other times, you know, the people were vassals. It was the government that ruled, and the people had to comply with whatever rules the government set up. Well, no, in America, it was that the people rule. And the people aren't, you know, it's incredible that there's so much wisdom in the common man, and oftentimes it's the elites that have bad judgment. So the American system is truly different, and many other countries have been affected by our system. That is true, and that's a blessing, because we were to be, you know, a light on a hill, you know, a beacon to other nations. For instance, the Philippines constitution is almost identical to the U.S. constitution. Now they don't, I mean, we're kind of catching up with them in terms of moving away too much corruption. They've always had been plagued with sort of corrupt leaders, and unfortunately that's our plight today, and that's why I think our work is cut out for us to bring our country back to its senses, where we really empower the people and we disempower the elites that want to govern us.
Well, we are. I've been giving speeches on this theme, that I really believe that we are in the third founding of America. And obviously the first founding was the Revolutionary War, where we declared our independence from Britain. The second was the Civil War, where we answered the question with a resounding no, that men are not property of others, that men cannot own other men, that slavery is not okay. But we're in this huge ideological battle that's going on right now. That's why this book that you have written is so it's really important, Scott Powell.
Well, we are in a spiritual battle. I mean, you really, and I think this is a wonderful opportunity for those of us who are believers to be able to enter into conversations with people more so than ever before. It's so much easier now because people that have no, you know, fundamental beliefs in God still want to figure things out, and nothing makes sense to them. So it's easy to, you know, to enter into a conversation wherein you can begin to introduce this notion that our problems are all related to departing from God's way, from God's purpose of creation. You know, God created us man and woman, boy and girl, and he wanted us to be fruitful and multiply. That means that traditional marriages are the only source of propagating our species. But we find that we're coming out of the blue, almost out of nowhere, is this transgender movement that destroys the lives of young people who enter into deciding that, hey, I might be in the wrong body. I'm going to change my gender. And the medical establishment that is facilitating this is just, I mean, we're reminded, again, we're reminded through the COVID period that the medical establishment has a very big problem with corruption, and it's money-driven corruption. They make money by giving people the diseases that they then can treat, you know, for the rest of their lives. It's crazy. So I love Thanksgiving because we can leave all of the troubles behind us on this Thanksgiving day, and we can really reflect on this amazing story that can renew us today and every other day of our life. So,
well, I'm excited about that. So let's leave that as our cliffhanger on that. I'm talking with Scott Powell, and I want to say thank you. I have amazing sponsors. One of those, or two of those, is Laramie Energy and Karis Oil and Gas, and I want to thank them for their gold sponsorship of the show. And my friends, it is reliable, efficient, affordable, and abundant energy sources that allows everyday people to thrive and flourish. And so it's important that we remember that and be grateful for that. And also, another sponsor is Hooters Restaurants, and they have five locations. That's Loveland, Aurora, Lone Tree, Westminster, and Colorado Springs. And they have great lunch specials Monday through Friday. I love their fish and chips, but more importantly, how I got to know them. It is an important story about freedom and free markets and capitalism and PBIs, those politicians and bureaucrats and interested parties that want to pick winners and losers. And you can find that story at my website. But we get to do this because I have just amazing sponsors. And one of those is the Roger Mangan State Farm Insurance Team. And they want you to know that you can feel comfortable and feel well served and to understand your insurance coverage. And they will their office will respond to your call or text 24 hours a day. So for that 24-hour peace of mind, call Roger Mangan at 303-795-8855. Like a good neighbor, Roger Mangan's team is there.
So I switched my insurance to the Roger Mangan State Farm Insurance Agency. Get this. I actually talked to Roger Mangan, who has been helping people with their insurance coverage in our community for 47 years. He helped me create a State Farm personalized price insurance plan for my home and auto and explained affordable options. For personalized service and peace of mind that you are working with a team that cares about you and your family, call Roger Mangan now at 303-795-8855. Kim highly recommends the Roger Mangan State Farm Insurance Team. Again, that number is 303-795-8855.
Johnny Stubbs Services uses only the best quality products to ensure that your heating and cooling systems run efficiently and last for years. Johnny Stubbs Services' team of experts is available to provide the proper guidance and help you make informed decisions about your heating and cooling needs. Johnny Stubbs Services prides themselves on delivering prompt and reliable service and stands behind their work with a satisfaction guarantee. JohnnyStubbsServices.com, the trusted contractor for all your heating and air conditioning needs. That's JohnnyStubbsServices.com.
You'd like to get in touch with one of the sponsors of The Kim Monson Show, but you can't remember their phone contact or website information. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmonson.com. That's Kim, MONSON.com.
¶¶
And welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. Thank you so much for joining us. Check out our website. That is Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly email newsletter, and you can email me at Kim@KimMunson.com as well. And thank you to all of you who support us. We are an independent voice, and we search for truth and clarity by looking at these issues through the lens of freedom versus force, force versus freedom. If something's a good idea, you should not have to force people to do it. I did want to mention Dr. James Lyons Weiler's great educational programs that are being offered at ipac-edu.org. That's ipak-edu.org. And he is matching up amazing instructors with all of us that are intellectually curious with a wide variety of courses. And they're preparing for the next offering. And you can get more information by going to ipac-edu.org. That's ipac-edu.org. And if you put in Munson, you will get an additional discount on the very reasonable tuition prices on that. So be sure and check that out. We have pre-recorded these shows for the week of Thanksgiving, and I love doing that because I get to have these really special guests, and we get to focus on them even more. And I just love doing that. And on the line with me is Scott Powell. And he is a senior fellow at the Discovery Institute. He is the author of the book Rediscovering America, How the National Holidays Tell an Amazing Story About Who We Are. And it was on the Amazon number one new release list in American history for 8 straight weeks. And it reveals God's hand behind the success of the United States. Lessons that we can learn from, and we need to learn from them, and then we need to save and restore our country. So again, Rediscovering America will surprise you, delight you, and blow your mind. So, Scott Powell, let's talk about Thanksgiving.
Well, you know, I like to put Thanksgiving in the context, really, of the story of the pilgrims. Thanksgiving holiday, of course, is what we celebrate when we gather around the table and give thanks to God for the food. But really, the first Thanksgiving was quite a big thanks because of what the pilgrims had gone through to get to that first harvest and that first Thanksgiving. And it remains a favorite holiday, I think, for many Americans, and I think for good reasons beyond enjoying the feast. And I think right now, with our country passing through troubled times, it's worth revisiting the pilgrims' 5 significant achievements, which created the seminal story of America and reveal, I think, remarkable insight into who we are and the qualities of character we need to overcome our present challenges. So first, it's important that people understand that of the many groups of settlers who came to America, only the pilgrims were singularly motivated by a spiritual quest for religious freedom. One that had its origin with the Protestant Reformation a century before, and they repeatedly spoke about their voyage to the New World in terms of a flight from tyranny to freedom, comparing themselves to God's chosen people, the Israelites who overcame slavery and abuse in Egypt to get to the Promised Land. And similar to the Israelites' exodus, the pilgrims had left what they saw as an oppressive and morally corrupt authorities in Great Britain and Europe, and they came, you know, they had to have a lot of courage to cross that big ocean to create a new life in America, in the New World. Thus, both Christians and Jews find profound meaning in the Pilgrim's Thanksgiving story because it really has that Hebraic orientation, you know, leaving the slavery of Egypt for the Promised Land. That is what that's how the pilgrims saw themselves. So Thanksgiving can be thought of as a holiday that made the other American holidays possible. You know, without the pilgrims having the courage and the absolute faith in their cause and calling, and a willingness to sacrifice and risk everything. Think about that. They were the first to risk everything. Before the founders risked, at the time of the Revolutionary War, the pilgrims risked everything. And they embarked on this 94-foot Mayflower boat. That's a very small boat for over 100 people to get on. And it was a ship really of questionable seaworthiness. And were it not for their faith and determination to find freedom of conscience and live according to their biblical beliefs, you know, there may not have ever been the subsequent holidays, the 4th of July, Independence Day, or subsequent American holidays. So it was after this harrowing passage across the Atlantic, one that included storms, you know, wild pitching and broadside batterings by gale force winds and ferocious seas. And one of these, probably two-thirds of the way over, you know, it was so bad, that broadside battering, that it split the ship's main beam. And that would mean that the ship would collapse if they didn't, you know, if they continued to be in other storms, because it fundamentally weakened the structure. But lo and behold, on that Mayflower, there were a variety of people, including one that had the foresight, if they're going to build homes in the New World, they needed a jack to raise up structures and beams. So they got that jack and put it under the broken beam and got the crew to circle around and screw it and got it back in place, and they lived with that jack in place for the rest of the voyage. So it's a small little story there, but you know, but were it not for their faith and determination, I don't know that they would have made it. So anyway, the Mayflower had a charter to go to the Virginia colony territory, and you know, they actually did get a charter from the British government to go to the New World and to go to a certain area. And the area that they were going to go to was the north, in the north part of the so-called Virginia, what they call the Virginia Territory. The the earlier settlers, the 1607 voyage to Jamestown, which was really the first settlement, was part of Virginia Territory also. Now that settlement, and we don't have time to go into that, but. But there were, it was a colony of all men. So it had no vision for procreation and survival. It was really to go and find the riches and maybe return. But in any case, the pilgrims intended to settle, and so they had numerous families. But they were blown off course. And so they couldn't. They were headed north of the territory that they had been assigned, and they tried to go against the currents and the seas off Cape Cod, but it didn't work out, and they were running out of food, and the food was spoiling. So they decided they were going to go. They were going to find a place to settle. And of course, they had no idea what they were gonna encounter. They could say that they knew not where they were nor how to proceed. So, what did they do? They beseeched the Almighty for favor in making landfall in a suitable place with fresh water and fertile soil to establish their settlement.
So they prayed. And on that note, we'll go to break here in just a moment. But I think, I mean, even right there, and I'm thinking the Almighty on the storms and pushing them where they are. I mean, he's had his hand on this country since the very beginning, Scott Powell. And that's what we're talking about in Thanksgiving. And I am very grateful because I have a lot of great sponsors. I know each and every one of them personally. And one of the things that I am so grateful for on this Thanksgiving Day, as you know, we've pre-recorded these shows, is one of my great sponsors and a dear friend, and that is Karen Levine. And Karen, you and I have known each other for a long time, and I have to say that my life is richer because of our friendship, and also what you do supporting our shows is so important for the people of Colorado and the people of America, and I thank you for that.
Well, I find it quite a privilege, Kim. So thank you. Thank you for our friendship of all these decades, really, and the opportunity to be part of your journey and the journey of getting the truth out to the people of Colorado. I just think your mission is something I'm grateful for. Did not understand it in the beginning, continue to learn.
It was a work in progress.
It is still a work in progress, but I feel very, very blessed that I am able to be a sponsor of the Kim Munson Show and American Veteran Stories, and that we can share the history that you get to share on American Veteran Stories, and then the truths that you try to unveil here at the Kim Munson Show.
Well, and I thank you for that. And on this Thanksgiving Day, as you reflect about gratitude, what would you say to our listeners about gratitude?
I think the American ideal is still foundational to many of us in this country, in that we all should be grateful for what people have done before us, the things that have happened that have created this great nation of America. But we need to stop standing on the sidelines, and we need to engage, and we need to see that protecting it is worth protecting. And I see that in home ownership each and every day when hardworking American citizens, the Front Range here in Denver, my clientele who has worked hard and wants to do well for their families, wants to own a home, and what they have done to achieve homeownership and that we've been able to achieve with them. And I just feel incredibly blessed to get to work with many of your listeners in their real estate needs. And my clientele, I learn from them every day, but to be of service to them, I am grateful for.
Well, and realtors, that is a business as we really look at it. I mean, the true entrepreneurs in America. And we are seeing that public policy is going after these entrepreneurs and American Dream. And that's why I think it's so good. We are positioned here. Of all the work that we've done all these years, we're positioned here. We're a trusted voice to shed light on this. You're on the show on a regular basis and are really creating that relationship with my listeners. And I love that because it's so important to make sure we keep entrepreneurship alive in America.
Exactly. And really, that is what built America, was small business, entrepreneurs, the creativeness of small business people and entrepreneurial aspirations. And realtors are self-employed individuals who go to work every day unemployed. Mm-hmm. And we look for opportunity to help people in their real estate needs. And what people a lot of times don't understand is, when they look at our fee, they may think that it's excessive, but they don't look at the fact that I write the checks for all my marketing, mm-hmm. and I have to pay a substantial amount in income tax because of being a sole proprietor. And I do that because I love the freedom that I get in being a sole proprietor.
Well, and the other thing about that is it's just like a brain surgeon. When you go and you look at the bill for a brain surgeon, and you want to make sure you're working with a brain surgeon who knows what they're doing and is bringing years and years and years of experience to that surgery. It is the same thing in the real estate market. To work with a seasoned professional like Karen Levine. And so really buying that expertise and getting you on their side of the table during this negotiation. So how would you like to finish this up, and how can people reach you?
Well, they can reach me at 303-877-7516. And in finishing up, I just want to wish each and every one of your listeners a very happy Thanksgiving. And should you have a real estate need throughout the remainder of this year or in the year to come, I'm available.
And that number is 303-877-7516. Thank you, Karen Levine.
With the limited number of homes in the Colorado Front Range market, Karen Levine can help you achieve your home buying or selling vision. Karen has the right connections, technology, and strategies to help you buy or sell your home or to purchase a new build. Whether you're feeling overwhelmed or want someone to take the wheel, or you just need a second opinion, you can rest assured that RE/MAX Realtor Karen Levine is the right agent for you. Call Karen Levine at 303-877-7516. Karen is the trusted professional who strives for excellence. That number is 303-877-7516.
The rise in interest rates is causing challenges and creating opportunities. For nearly 20 years, mortgage specialist with Polygon Financial Group, Lauren Levy, has helped individuals realize their hopes and dreams of home ownership, fund kids' educations through second mortgages, and access capital by utilizing reverse mortgages. Lauren is not constrained to work with just one lender because he works with so many different lenders. Licensed in 49 states, Lauren offers choices for your individual mortgage needs. Preparation leads to success, so call Lauren Levy at 303-880-8881 so that you're prepared for opportunity in the mortgage market. That's Lauren Levy, 303-880-8881.
Our future depends on educated, informed, and active citizens. You could do your part by reading Dr. James Lyons Weiler's latest articles at Popular Rationalism on Substack. That's popularrationalism.substack.com.
Focused and wise marketing is essential for your success, especially during tough economic times. If you love The Kim Munson Show, strive for excellence and understand the importance of engaging in the battle of ideas that is raging in America. Then talk with Kim about partnership, sponsorship opportunities. Email Kim at kimmunson.com. Kim focuses on creating relationships with individuals and businesses that are tops in their fields. So they are the trusted experts listeners turn to when looking for products or services. Kim personally endorses each of her sponsors. Again, reach out to Kim at kimmunson.com.
And welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. Check out our website. That is Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Sign up for our weekly email newsletter, and you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. And it's Thanksgiving Day. I wish you and yours a very happy Thanksgiving. And we pre-recorded these shows, very special shows for you. We're talking with Scott Powell. He's the author of Rediscovering America, How the National Holidays Tell an Amazing Story About Who We Are. This book should be on your shelves, your family's shelves. And we as parents and grandparents should be opening this up and reading it with our children and our grandchildren. Before we get back into the conversation, I'm very grateful for Janssen Photography. They are wonderful sponsors of the show. And Glenn and Mary Janssen have a beautiful property in Lakewood, Colorado. So all kinds of beautiful landscapes for that special photo, that special portrait of your memories. It could be your family or your children, your senior in high school. And of course, they can do these great photos for your business and political career as well. So that website is Janssen Photography. That's J-A-N-S-S-E-N photography.com. Scott Powell, as we were going into break, we were talking about the pilgrims and that they were solely here for religious freedom. During the break, you were giving me a little bit of the breakdown of who all was on that ship of 102 people. And I find that super interesting. So what did that look like?
Well, it was you had the pilgrim. What we think of the pilgrims were the separatists. That is to say, the people that had found that the Church of England was had carried on some traditions left over from the Catholic tradition, and it was political, and they began worshiping separately from the Church of England, and then they got persecuted and were driven to Holland, and where they lived, the pilgrims lived in Holland for about 11 years before making the voyage to the New World. So when they finally were sponsored with a ship, and they actually had two ships to start with, but the smaller ship, the Speedwell, leaked very badly, and it had to be abandoned. And it also shrunk the number of pilgrims who could go to the New World because there just wasn't space. Think of 102 passengers on a 94-foot ship. I mean, it was very crowded. But there were the pilgrims, which were about 3/5 of the 102 passengers, and the balance were crew, military protectors, Miles Standish and the John Alden family. John Alden was a cooper. He made barrels, and that was very important in preserving food. So they needed to have a cooper. I think there were several others. So the first accomplishment or achievement, I'd say, that's important in understanding the pilgrim story, the Thanksgiving story, is that the pilgrims were the only group that came to the New World with a singular quest, a single-minded quest of a spiritual quest to live their life in freedom according to the biblical principles as they understood them. And so that's the first thing. And what's next comes up in resuming the story where we left off, where the pilgrims had been blown off course, their food is running out and it's spoiling, and they're beginning to have a mutiny on the ship, not from the Christian separatists, but really some of the other people. They were, you know, they didn't have the faith and they didn't have the sort of internal commitment to the quest that the pilgrims had, and they were threatening to mutiny and turn back. Although, they couldn't have turned back. They didn't have enough food to turn back. So in that environment, the elders of the pilgrims decided, well, we need to save our community, and we need to draft up an agreement that everyone can sign on to, because we're going to land we don't know what we're going to encounter. We may encounter hostile native people, native Indians. We just don't know. So they decided off Cape Cod to draft up the Mayflower Compact and to get a commitment of everyone on board, all the men, because that's how it was back then. All the men had to sign off on the Mayflower Compact. And the Mayflower Compact basically stated that governance would be done by a democratic vote, that everybody's wishes would be taken into account on any decisions, and that they would look out for each other, they would protect each other. So it was very short, but it was sort of the seminal document that ultimately was the foundation for self-government. So it was John Carver and William Bradford and William Brewster who drafted up this Mayflower Compact. And it was signed by everyone, and with every man aboard signing the compact, the pilgrims established the foundation for democratic self-government based on the will of the people for the very first time. So you could say that the Mayflower Compact really laid the cornerstone of the U.S. Constitution, which would be drafted and adopted some 170 years later.
It's absolutely remarkable.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. And it was simple. I mean, you know, here they are at sea, crew's mutinying. You know, they drafted this up fairly quickly. It wasn't very long, but it had these key tenets in it of self-government and looking out for each other. And so it was, but it's really quite amazing. Now, there's an interesting story about the pilgrims. The Mayflower was not a brand new boat. It was actually an older boat. And it had been previously enlisted as a wine transport cargo ship between, you know, the wine country of France and Spain and England. And unlike most merchant ships, the Mayflower had what they call a sweet smell to it from all the decks of the ship and its bilges being disinfected with wine, wine sloshing and soaking from the broken barrels of, who knows, Bordeaux and high alcohol port in the many prior crossings of the sometimes stormy English Channel. So that disinfected environment meant that, you know, that there was, while people got seasick and had problems, there were no deaths among the pilgrims. No one, the disinfected environment may have had an effect. But all that changed once the Mayflower's passengers settled in the New World, in a place they called New Plymouth, Massachusetts. And that was in December of 1620. I mean, it's winter then when they finally made landfall there. And the first winter was devastating, with illness afflicting most and over half the pilgrims ended up dying, including four entire families.
Oh, my gosh.
Can you believe it? I mean, here they are, 60-odd people, and they lose over half their people with children, whole families. But the fate of the pilgrims, you know, surely could have been more difficult had they not settled where they did, because God arranged for them to settle in a place that was adjacent to friendly natives of the Poconuc and Indian village that were part of the Wampanoag tribe. And had they not befriended two providentially who could speak broken English, those were Squanto and Samoset. We don't have time to go into their stories, but it just turns out that Squanto and Samoset were there, you know, in those Indian tribes, and they could speak English reasonably well because they had spent, they'd been kidnapped, one of them had been kidnapped and taken to, you know, to Spain, and then was freed and got to England and learned English and found passage back on a trading ship or a fishing vessel. They came back to New England, so had Squanto and Simison not been there and to communicate and teach the pilgrims survival skills, showing them how to hunt, fish, plant various crops they'd never seen before, like corn and squash and varieties of beans. And these were all unknown to Englishmen. They were unknown to Europeans. England and Europe had never seen a corn. You know,
I did not know that.
No, they'd never seen a corn cob before.
Wow.
So the third, let's see if we can make a little more progress. The third major achievement that the pilgrims made was a lasting peace treaty. And this was the Pilgrim-Wampanoag Peace Treaty, which was signed within 5 months of their arrival in April 1st, 1621. And it was signed by Massasoit and the leaders of the Plymouth Colony. And it was a remarkable accomplishment, for it lasted more than 50 years, longer than any subsequent peace treaties made by other colonizing groups with Native Indian tribes. This was the longest-lasting peace treaty with Indians that any of the white men, the settlers, had, which was really quite something. The fact that there were bloody conflicts between other colonists and tribes, such as the Pequot Wars fought in Connecticut in 1636, you know, makes the Pilgrims really stand out, for they succeeded in maintaining this long-lasting peace between the natives. Now, in spite of learning from the Native Indians how to plant and cultivate and harvest new crops in the first year, the Pilgrims complied with their sponsoring Virginia Company charter that called for the settlement farmland to be owned and worked communally and for harvest to be equally shared. And so this was what, of course, a socialist common property approach. And that created disincentives to work. So William Bradford, the head of the Pilgrims, recorded in his memoirs that while, quote, slackers showed up late for work, everybody was happy to claim their equal share of the production. And production only shrank as a result. Now, no one is exactly certain of the date of the first Thanksgiving, but it came after the first harvest, and that was a meager harvest, partially because the communal farming wasn't very productive.
And they changed that, right? Because they were going to starve if they kept that up.
Yeah, and I'll tell you that story. They actually kept it up for two seasons, and then they abandoned it. So in their first Thanksgiving, they were giving thanks for their first harvest, meager though it was. And when Massachusetts was invited to join the Pilgrims, it was assumed that he wouldn't bring probably more guests than the 40-odd Pilgrims that had survived. But it turns out Massasoit showed up with twice the number of Pilgrims. And they showed up well-stocked with food, with fowl, and game of all kinds, including five deer that they had killed for the feast.
Wow.
Which was more than enough for everyone. And it turns out that the first Thanksgiving celebration would last 3 days, punctuated by Indian song and games and dance and pilgrim prayers and even a military parade by Miles Standish. Can you picture this? It's really incredible, isn't it?
It is. It truly is
incredible.
It really
is. It's incredible. What an incredible story. So that's the third accomplishment, was the peace treaty with the Indians.
Okay,
great. And
Well, let's keep that at that, and then we're going to go to the next segment here.
Yeah, we'll go to the fourth, and then we'll go to the fifth. So we'll cover the time pretty well.
Perfect. I do want to mention the USMC Memorial Foundation before we go to break. They're doing great work. The Marine Memorial is the official Marine Memorial. It's right here in Golden, Colorado. And Paula Sarles, her team, I'm grateful for them raising the money for the remodel to make it a reality. And you can help them by going to usmcmemorialfoundation.org, usmcmemorialfoundation.org. It is a great day to say thank you and to remember those that gave their lives, been willing to give their lives for us, and a great way to honor them is to go to usmcmemorialfoundation.org. We get to have these conversations because of sponsors. One of those is Boson Law.
A recent report notes that the number of children diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder is consistently and dramatically increasing. This is heartbreaking. If your child or grandchild or someone you know has been diagnosed with autism or ADHD following exposure to Tylenol or acetaminophen during pregnancy, call Boson Law at 303-999-9999. Boson Law is a Colorado-based law firm who has been fighting Big Pharma for over 20 years. Call now at 303-999-9999 for a free, no-obligation review of your potential claim. Call now at 303-999-9999.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Shooting outside can be limited, but at Franktown Firearms' 10-lane, 30-yard indoor range, the weather is always just right. Franktown's range supports handguns, shotguns, rifles up to 50 caliber, and even black powder loads. And safety equipment is provided for free. Since Franktown's range is connected with their gun store, they have a full selection of rental firearms, so you can try before you buy to ensure that it's a good fit for you. And if you become a member at Franktown Firearms and Shooting Range, you can even access the range after hours. The range is very well ventilated with fresh air constantly, so you can breathe easy while you shoot. Most importantly, Franktown Firearms is a family-owned and operated gun store. At Franktown, you will be treated with respect as their client because they want you to be confident with your shooting and keep coming back. So use your own gun or try a new one on the range at Franktown Firearms today. Go to klzradio.com/Franktown to find out more. Franktown Firearms, where friends are made.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. Thank you so much for joining us. I wish each and every one of you a very happy Thanksgiving. And we have pre-recorded the shows this week to have very special shows for you. And before we get back into the conversation, I did want to mention the Center for American Values. They are non-political, but they're focused on a couple of things, keeping the stories alive, the portraits of our Medal of Honor recipients and their quotes and their and just keeping that alive. And also, though, focusing and instilling in us these American values of honor, integrity, and patriotism. So they have some great educational programs. You can get more information about that by going to AmericanValueCenter.org. That is AmericanValueCenter.org. On the line with me is Scott Powell. He is the author of a great book, and that is Rediscovering America, How the National Holidays Tell an Amazing Story About Who We Are. Scott, we're talking about the pilgrims. You said there were five significant achievements, and what's number four?
Well, number four comes out of, we pick up right where we left off after the meager Thanksgiving harvest, but it was made up for, more than made up for, by the Indians who attended. You know, were twice the size of the pilgrims and brought all this food that enabled the feast to go on for three days. But they didn't abandon collective farming, even though the first harvest was meager. But it was decided that, you know, that was what they were going to do a second season, and proved equally disappointing. And it was Governor Bradford who ultimately, and we know a lot about this. It's factual because Governor Bradford, William Bradford, kept an amazing diary, and I believe that it's been, you know. I can't remember how they titled that diary, but it is in book form, and you can find it. So a little bit of internet research, you can find out what the title is and probably obtain a copy. It is quite fascinating. And it's interesting I think it's another interesting point for Jewish people, because we talked about the Hebraic orientation of the pilgrims, but William Bradford wrote the first 20 pages of his diary in Hebrew. I mean, he was, he's an Englishman, speaks English, writes English, but he chose to write the first 20 pages of his diary in Hebrew. Why is that? Well, I can't answer that, except that perhaps it was a recognition of the future, God's hand in our history from the beginning, that we're not just a Christian nation, but we also stand on the shoulders of the Jewish tradition. Of course, the Jewish tradition is where our laws come from. You know, the Jewish tradition was really based on law, whereas the Christian tradition built on that, but the emphasis was on, love and grace and relationships. When Jesus was asked of which of the laws was the greatest by a Pharisee, Jesus answered it very succinctly, saying that if you love God with all your heart and you love your neighbor as yourself, you will have fulfilled all the laws. So love is the message. But it is interesting that the Hebrew traditions were embedded in the pilgrims. So it wasn't, even though they're Christians, and they're true Christians because they wanted to live according to the Bible as they understood it. You could say they're almost literalists probably. But they were certainly, by their actions were, they were not rigid people. These were very loving people, and we'll talk. So the second season was equally disappointing, and Governor Bradford, and I'm reading from his, his diary, he recorded the socialist collectivist farming system was, quote, found to breed much confusion and discontent and retard much employment that would have been to their benefit and comfort. So before the 1623 season, he scrapped the socialist farming and he replaced it with private ownership of land for each of the families. And as a result of becoming responsible for their own welfare and gaining freedom to choose what to grow for their own consumption, what they liked, or trade, because they would trade with neighbors, the pilgrims' productivity ended up surging. They had no trouble as they had in the first 2 years, because they were free to grow what they wanted, and they had to take responsibility for their own families, and they wanted to, maybe trade it gain some. Gain some relative wealth. Of course, this is before there was even probably coin and money, except what they brought from England. So the scrapping of the socialist system is what I call the fourth major achievement of the pilgrims. So even before our country was born, we know that we were blessed in freedom, and God's plan was for America to have a free market system, period. Free market, not, people say capitalist, but I like the free market jargon because it really is based on freedom of choice and the opportunity to pursue freely what you thought was what what you wanted to do, what you wanted to produce. And that brings in creativity. Obviously, we're made in the image and likeness of God. God is the creator. He intended us to be creators. Well, how do we show our creativity? Well, of course, if you're an artist, you show your creativity through your work. And if you want to make a living at your art, you've got to be able to sell it. So you've got to create things that people want. But in business, it's the same principle. We're creators. We have to create products that solve people's problems and that people want. And when we do that, we're living out this God-given creative orientation that he intended us to have. So we've covered the fourth achievement, which was the rejection of socialism. Now we'll talk about the fifth. Do we have time to do that?
We do. We've got about 3.5 minutes.
Okay. So the fifth factor, and I sort of came up with these in reading the Pilgrim story, that distinguished the Pilgrims was really their model relational behavior. And they were extraordinarily tolerant. I mean, they were tolerant to have a mixed community on the ship. You know, when you're in close quarters, you can really, tempers can fly, but for the most part, they got along with people that were not part of their group and kept relative harmony within that diverse community. But they also looked outwardly to serve and help others. And here's a story that illustrates that. It was in March of 1623. It came to be known that Massachusetts, who was the chief sachem, he was the tribal leader of the Wampanoag. And there were subsidiaries of the Wampanoags. The Wampanoags were the big tribe, and then there were smaller tribes like the Pocanawkets. But in March of 1623, Massasoit was on the brink of death, and the Pilgrims heard about this. He lived about, I think, some 20 miles away from where the Pilgrims were. And it was Senior Pilgrim Elder Edward Winslow who had a, he was an elder in the community, so he preached, and he was a leader, a prayer leader, and he also was very good with natural herbs. He had an orientation of finding natural cures for illness, and so he being the right guy to go to Massachusetts, he immediately set out, I have to correct myself, it was a 40-mile journey to administer medieval broth and natural herbs, and of course to pray over Massasoit. And so he got there. It took him several days to get there, but once Winslow got there, he proceeded to take care of Massasoit and administer his natural medicines and prayer. And astonishingly, Massasoit recovered. He recovered almost a full recovery within days. And again, we know about this story because it was recorded. And he said, and I'm now quoting Massasoit, and of course it's recorded, so it's not taped. So the words might have been slightly different, but what he said was, now I see the English are my friends and love me. And whilst I live, I will never forget this kindness that they have showed me. So this is the fifth great accomplishment, which is really part of this great commission that Christ calls us to do, and that is to love others as yourself and to serve them. And you think about all the problems that seem to be plaguing us in America today and elsewhere too. And one thing that I see going on with a lot of people that seem to have all kinds of problems is that they're very self-absorbed people.
Right, right.
And if they would learn to serve other people, if they would learn to take an interest and care for other people, and that doesn't mean they drop what they're doing entirely, but that they just get oriented towards doing nice things for other people on a daily basis, even if it's greeting your cashier with kindness, it changes a disposition.
It does, Scott Powell. It goes a long way. And we're out of time with Scott Powell, but what a great, great way to get us into Thanksgiving Day here. So, Scott Powell, thank you so much. I greatly appreciate it, and I wish you and yours a very happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you, Kim, and same to you, and same to everyone in your audience who are wonderful people. And, help Kim every way you can, because the more you help her, the more her ministry grows. So it's a we're called to help each other.
Great. And again, Scott Powell.
Message after all.
Thank you so much. And again, happy Thanksgiving to you and yours.
Those are the speaker, commentators, hosts, their guests, and callers. They are not necessarily the views and opinions of Crawford Broadcasting or KLZ management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.